ABC News, I'm Shiri Preston. Last night it was Doug Imhoff, Michelle Obama, and Barack Obama. Tonight it'll be Bill Clinton and Tim Walz. The Democratic convention continuing in Chicago, along with protests in the streets of the city.
This is Jim Ryan in Chicago, about a mile east of the convention venue Tuesday night. Pro-Palestinian demonstrators held a rally without a permit and clashed with police who tried to clear the street in front of the Israeli consulate. The National Lawyers Guild says more than 70 people were arrested.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is on his way back from the Middle East. Another round of talks there and no ceasefire agreement for Gaza. A Texas judge has just stepped in saying that the Federal Trade Commission does not have the power to implement a ban on non-compete agreements. The FTC says non-competes let workers switch from job to job more easily. Search goes on in water that's 160 feet deep for bodies of those who went down when a luxury yacht sank this week off the coast of Sicily. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris's rally in battleground Wisconsin last night virtually doubled the DNC for a few hours. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
An energized crowd of 15,000 that stood in line for hours greeted the top of the Democratic ticket at the Fiserv Forum.
Let us fight for the ideals we hold dear, and let us always remember, when we fight, we win.
And Harris thanked the crowd for making her the nominee. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
Harley Davidson says this week it's ending its diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. The Human Rights Campaign says the decision shows Harley doesn't care about equality in the workplace. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
With news from the center, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A UTV crash Sunday afternoon resulted in multiple injuries. At approximately 3:45 in the town of Viroqua, a 14-year-old from rural Viroqua was operating a side-by-side UTV eastbound on Upper Maple Dale Road and failed to negotiate a curve to the right. The UTV tipped onto its left side and came to rest along the left edge of the roadway. The 14-year-old operator, a 15-year-old passenger from Steuben, a 14-year-old passenger from Gays Mills, and a 14-year-old passenger from Soldiers Grove were all treated at Vernon Memorial Healthcare in Viroqua. By late Sunday evening, all the injured were released. Taking a look at today's forecast, it looks to be a beautiful day with sunny to partly cloudy skies and a high of 74. Then tonight, a few clouds and cool with a low of 50. Tomorrow, partly cloudy and mild, a high of 76. And that's what you need to know. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers with a win over the Cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers pitcher Frankie Montas goes 7 innings, allowing just one hit, as they held on to win 3-2 last night in St. Louis. Infielder Joey Ortiz making a spectacular play at third to rob Mason Wynn of a hit in the sixth.
I mean, it's easy to play defense when Frankie's up there throwing strikes, getting contact, keeping us involved. Like I said, when he's throwing strikes and keeping us involved, it's easy for us to make plays like that.
Game two is tonight. NFL Packers training camp wrapping up this week, and Matt LaFleur pretending to get upset when a reporter arrived late to his press conference.
They can handle.
How many times are you going to come to my press conference late? We got a rule in the team meeting. You don't interrupt the meeting. Sit your butt outside. Just kidding.
I thought that was directed at me, Mark.
I tried to do my best to play that off. Okay.
That's Matt LaFleur, the team with a joint practice session tomorrow against the Ravens. With sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy today with a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Tonight, it'll be mostly clear, dropping into the mid-50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, upper 70s. It's going to get warm and a little muggy for the weekend with highs back in the mid to upper 80s by Saturday and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for childcare by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
As fall approaches, you have a lot to prepare for. Back to school, sporting events, family gatherings, and staying on top of your health. The virus that causes COVID-19 continues to evolve. So this fall, no matter what you're prepping for, you can prioritize your family's health and make a game plan for COVID-19 vaccination. Ask your doctor or pharmacist to learn more. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dr. Laura Hanks is here for public service announcement at 11:33. Send your questions to janesays@civicmedia.us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. News from the center, WRCE.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. You know, the weather's been beautiful this week. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I was just, before we get into the show, I was just reflecting on that song, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. And Calvin, you may not believe this, but I've been listening to that for 55 years. And, you know, it's just an unbelievable, you know, reality that, you know, when that was released, man, back in 1971, man, I remember, you know, still being in high school and just listening to the lyrics and just the way he put it together. And it still is relevant and sounds as good as it did 55 years ago. Well, let's do this. Let's get into the show. I want to welcome my guest, Mr. Richard Trent. He is the executive director of the Main Street Alliance. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
What's up, folks? I'm thriving. I've come into a nice little spate of pleasant Midwestern weather. What's up with that, man? I left the swamp in D.C. and now I'm out here, and y'all got it going on, man. I'm feeling it. I love it.
So Midwestern weather, man. For whatever reason, man, I'm hearing a kickback. I'm getting my voice. So if we can get that worked out, Midwest. I mean, Washington D.C. is Midwestern, brother.
That's it's interesting. Explain. What do you mean by that?
No, I mean right now our weather's not so different from Washington D.C. this time of year. You know, it should be what 70s.
So when I left DC, it was yesterday morning. We're out here 48 hours for the DNC. My wife, we had our second child. Thank you. Yeah, we had our second child a few weeks, 3 weeks ago, and I begged her for 48 hours at the DNC, and she was like, "Boy, you know, boy, bye. Go ahead and get out of here." When I left D.C., it was humid, man, like swampy, just mosquitoes. It's different. Oh, it's different out here. It's a pleasant breeze coming off the water, and it's perfect. It's really, really nice out here.
Let's do this, sir. Let's get into what the Main Street Alliance is. I think it's clearly important that the reason that we have you on is to talk about that small business community. It's not a small group, but I mean, small business is the backbone of our nation, and sometimes I think people forget it. They look at the major corporations and they think that they're the people employing all the majority of the people, but that's not the case, is it, sir?
So small businesses, it feels like America is kind of re-entering its small business era, whether it's social media or print media, the RNC, the DNC, everybody's talking about the importance of small business, the importance of local economies, and for good reason. I mean, the small business community basically owns about 50% of all jobs in America now, two-thirds of job creation. And it's that kind of ambient force that makes most communities worth visiting. You know, like when you go back to a place, it's probably because you had a memorable experience at a local restaurant or bar, or you went into an antique shop and were charmed. And that's the type of vibrance that our American communities need. But you know, those small businesses are in danger from corporate consolidation that goes unchecked, from unfair tax policy that skews benefits more in the direction of mega corporations than in the direction of the smaller enterprise, from a care economy that drives up operating a patchwork care economy that drives up operating costs for businesses. If you can't offer paid leave or affordable health care to your employees, it makes it harder to retain and recruit employees. And so there are a lot of challenges that small businesses face. And Main Street Alliance is that entity that, since the Obamacare fight days of the 2008, 2007, all the way up to, you know, fighting for ARPA funding in 2020 for the American Rescue Plan, Restaurant Stabilization Act, Child Care Stabilization, we've been that entity that have galvanized small business owners and entrepreneurs and created a space for small business owners to craft and shape policy that is going to keep Main Street competitive, that's going to keep America competitive, and that is going to make sure that it's not just the, as you kind of alluded to, these large corporations that are dictating everyday American life.
If you're just joining us, I'm joined by Mr. Richard Trent. He is the executive director of Main Street Alliance. You know, on average, I guess the small business person employs, you know, a couple people, and generally, I guess, that's family members. How difficult is it and has it been for them to, acquire loans? Because sometimes I wonder why small business people even continue to put forth the battle when it seems like the whole, deck is stacked against them?
That's a great question. In my conversations and going around the country talking to the small business owners in our membership network, what I find is that so many times small businesses arise out of just folks from the community being responsive to community need. You know, so in right outside of Madison, we visited a child care facility where the woman that started it was hearing from the community, we can't find affordable child care for our kids. We can't find anyone to take care of our kids. She started a child care facility and received favorable financing from local banks right in her own community. And that's the type of banding together that you've historically seen so much on Main Street. It's under threat. And to your initial question around accessing finance, accessing capital to grow these enterprises, it's because there's been a sustained defunding of entities like the SBA and organizations that typically provide startup capital for first-time entrepreneurs in this country, that has made it increasingly difficult to live out your dream, to pursue that passion, and to open up that business. And so it is tough accessing capital. And frankly, the interest rates of the post-COVID era didn't make those things much easier, and often made it so that financing terms were unfavorable for a lot of small-time enterprises. But there are entities like CDFIs, Community development, financial institutions that are these alternative financing institutions. A lot of small business owners don't know that there are small, that there are CDFIs in their own community that can provide more favorable lending terms or comparable lending terms, but with the technical assistance coupled with the loan that can help folks continue to grow their enterprise and actually be able to make payments. So there are options out there, and so often we find that it's just a lack of access to that information. So in addition to carving out space for small business owners to shape policy that matters to them, we also just try to democratize and disseminate educational resources for small business owners so that they know what they're dealing with and they're better equipped when they do decide to start that enterprise.
So let me ask you, when you small business owners that I've known and continue to know who continue to fight this battle, I sometimes wonder, you know, they mortgage their homes, they mortgage their futures, they believe in what it is they're doing, and they fight until the bitter end. And I sometimes wonder if there's a difference between the Democratic Party or the Republican Party as it relates to understanding the importance of small business and why it's so critically important. Since we know that it's such a major part of this nation, you wonder if there's one party, one side or the other, who understands it more and who's working towards making sure that those resources go to small businesses. Is there a difference between the two?
So I guess the best way to explain it is that both Democrats and Republicans talk a big talk about the importance of small business, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the policies that actually drive pro-competitive, pro-Main Street success. And if you're looking at the policies, you know, from party to party, I mean, we can talk about it, right? Like, very often, conservatives want to support things. And just, it's worth mentioning that Main Street Alliance is a nonpartisan organization, right? And so we, more than anything, we want a big tent coalition that includes conservatives and, you know, liberals and Democrats, independents. We want everybody to be at the table having this conversation. But I'm going to speak honestly about how the policy is reflected based on party affiliation. So conservatives take tax policy. The conservatives favor something like the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or what's called the Trump tax cuts, which drastically slashed the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21% and made it so that these mega corporations aren't paying their fair share, right? These are large corporations that typically draft off of large-scale government investment and infrastructure in order to get their massive enterprises off the ground, who aren't paying into the system. That's a huge issue. You've got a pass-through deduction that was touted as the, you know, conservatives appeal to the small business community in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But those benefits skew so heavily towards the top 10% of businesses in this country that are 100 million revenue plus. That's not a small business anymore. And so we have to have an honest conversation, for instance, around how the tax policy reflects our, you know, different parties' values. So there's also there's a million other sort of issue areas where if you dive in deep and look at what it actually means for small business, so often the Democratic policies tend to support.
So Mr. Trent, I have to get you to hold that thought. We've got to take a short hiatus. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Mr. Richard Trent. He is the new executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Pickleball. Yeah. Where's Greg Baca on this? Because I'm about to offend all these many, many people in Wisconsin who play it. It's overgrown ping pong. I mean, come on.
It's underbaked tennis.
Well, I've already done it because on the text line, Matt from Germantown, don't make fun of pickleball.
We're not making fun of pickleball. We're simply making fun of the people who play pickleball. There is a difference.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app? Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Richard Trent. He's the executive director of Main Street Alliance. Let me ask you, sir, I want to run these statistics down to you quickly and have you respond to them, because as people are encouraged and want to get involved in creating their own business and kind of making their own way, these are statistics according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor. First year, 79.4% of small businesses survive the first year. Year two, 20% fail. 5 years, 45% fail. 10 years, 65% fail. 15 years or more, 25% survive. Those are daunting numbers that should scare the average person to death in wanting to get engaged in this. You say what to that, sir?
Yeah, that's scary. And my wife, she came to me the other day. She was like, I want to open a cafe in that community. And I was like, maybe you should take a look at these numbers, baby. You know, I think, but no, here's the thing. If you are someone with a dream who wants to take your enterprise to Main Street, open up a shop, what so often happens is either a massive corporation, a Target, a Walmart, it could be a massive brewery, an Anheuser, but you know, they leverage their exorbitant corporate power in order to drive down prices in the short term, put small businesses out of business, and then once there's no competition on Main Street, they jack those prices back up, price gouge. We know the story. We're seeing it play out. And so I think that what's not abundantly clear from when you just read through those numbers is that this is directly connected to unchecked corporate consolidation that has been worsening basically since the 70s, when we kind of changed our tone around antitrust enforcement. There's good news, though. The FTC has shown that it's really got the stomach to go after these lawyered up massive corporations in ways that we haven't seen in nearly half a century. And that should be encouraging to small business owners. And there's a reason why we are starting to notch record small business growth in the last few years. I don't think it's a surprise that it comes at the same time that the FTC and organizations that are checking corporate power have revved up their energy and are holding large corporations more accountable for being good stewards of the American economy. So I'd say if you're a small business owner, be encouraged, because right now, at least, we are living within an administration that is willing to go after that corporate consolidation and maybe keep Main Street competitive for a bit longer.
Well, let's bring a small business owner on the line with us, Tom from LA. Good morning to you, Tom. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl. What I think needs to happen is we as small business owners need to distinguish ourselves differently from people that claim to be small business owners. And we need to talk about the supply and demand of a company, not supply side economics. I call ourselves, because I'm a small business owner, and I also deal with small businesses every single day, but I deal with mom and pop type of small independent retailers, small independent businesses, not these companies that are so huge like the Koch brothers that might call themselves a small business. We have got to drastically change the difference between a Main Street business, a brick and mortar business, versus these other types of businesses. And I hope that with your organization, you guys can start to look at that and distinguish that difference between the two, you know, in a bumper sticker type of way. Thank you very much. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you very much for the call, Tom.
That's unbelievably compelling. He's right. The vast majority of small businesses in this country are, you know, what are called micro enterprises, right? Just a couple people or sole proprietorships, or you've got even now the creator economy, right? Content creators and folks who open up an online shop. It's just one or two folks who are living out their dream. And he's absolutely right. Earl's absolutely right. They need to be distinguished from the 100 million plus, you know, 500 plus employees, businesses that will still try to jack the flavor of the small business community and say, oh, we're small businesses. Technically, you know, if you look at these numbers, but really in their operations and how they're moving within markets, they aren't really small businesses anymore. And so there does need to be this added layer of protection and this galvanized space for organizing specifically for those micro enterprises that are so key to the American economy. He's absolutely right.
So, Mr. Trent, the issue is, though, that what makes it possible for those large businesses to still be categorized as small businesses is politics. And so people who are in control of the laws that govern those things happen to be elected officials. And so none of these things change until the elected officials who were supposedly elected by us to look out for the interests of the average American is not somehow, you know, controlled by the entities bigger than the people who put them in office. It all goes back to politics, you know, and I know you guys are nonprofits and those kinds of things and can't get involved in those things, but I'll tell you, all of this, again, businesses cannot do what it is they're doing unless they have the blessings of the elected officials who make those things happen.
You're preaching to the choir. I mean, I will say, last night at the DNC, the main elected official who I heard talking about this foundational issue was Bernie Sanders, right? Bernie Sanders,
yes,
during his
always.
Bernie Sanders during his address made it clear that.
Look, I got to get you to hang. Hold the thought. 844-967-2789 is the number. I'm joined by Mr. Richard Trimp. He is with the Main Street Alliance, and this is about small business. And, you know, when we talk about all the other things going on in this nation, and we talked about the percentage of small businesses that are intertwined in our economy, you know, you remove them, I don't know where we'd be. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Remembering the things we used to do, the places we used to go, and everything was so, so mellow. How I love the show right now. I love the show right now.
News from the center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call says he plans to investigate any future false elector schemes. The Justice Department has charged three people for the 2020 Republican false elector scheme. Call tells Wisp Politics that anyone in Wisconsin who tries that again will be held accountable. Republican candidate for Vice President J.D. Vance picked up an endorsement yesterday near the site of rioting in Kenosha 4 years ago. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
Vance used that space to talk about crime and safety.
We're going to support the death penalty for drug dealers because they kill far more people than some of the most violent and vicious criminals.
The Kenosha Police Union endorsed Vance just a few days after the Milwaukee Police Union did the same. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
And I'm Terry Bell. Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Richland County Board of Supervisors approved a resolution supporting a realistic federal definition of rural. The resolution says that increasing access to federal funding in Richland County is essential to the long-term sustainability of county and municipal infrastructure. The Federal Department of Transportation defines rural area as an area that is outside an urbanized area with a population of over 200,000. The Rebuilding Rural Roads Act and Protecting Infrastructure Investments for Rural America Act would reduce the definition of rural under the Rural Surface Transportation Grant Program from 200,000 to 20,000, giving rural communities a greater opportunity to access grant funds and align with definitions used by the Small Business Administration and USDA Office of Rural Development. The Richland County Board of Supervisors approved a motion for the county clerk to send copies to representatives as well as the Wisconsin Counties Association. And that's what you need to know. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabo. You can track the trajectory for my addiction if you gauge my weight from season to season. Those are the words of Matthew Perry from his book, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. Perry says when he was carrying weight, he was drinking, and when he was skinny, it was pills. And when he had a goatee, it was lots of pills. According to the New York Post, series producers Marta Kaufman and David Crane spoke to the Times of London about their process when they learned of Perry's addiction to drugs and alcohol. Crane said they asked Perry if he wanted to leave the show to deal with his substance issues, to which Perry replied, "No, this is really important to me." Perry said in his book that he estimates he spent roughly $9 million in an attempt to become sober. The late star also said that season 9 of Friends was the only season of the show he was fully sober for. Perry was found dead in his hot tub in October 23 from a ketamine overdose. His live-in assistant has recently been charged, along with four others, in connection to Perry's death. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabo, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Partly cloudy today with a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Tonight, it'll be mostly clear, dropping into the mid-50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, upper 70s. It's going to get warm and a little muggy for the weekend with highs back in the mid to upper 80s by Saturday and Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
Matt Nair on air.
I trust Tim Walz to blank.
One from Luke Mathers that says, Tim Walz seems like the neighbor who knew that you were going to be out of town that weekend, so he mowed your lawn while you were gone so you didn't have to do it when you got back.
Keith from Middleton.
I was just going to say, I trust Tim Walz to watch my 3 and 5 year old grandchildren.
I trust Tim Walz to escort me home to get away from the creep at the bar.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Even Scott Walker and other Republicans are going apoplectic because Trump keeps melting down into these personal attacks. He's just off the rails, Trigby.
You know, Scott may not be the brightest man, but he knows what politics is. Donald Trump is never going to change. Scott, come on the show. We'll talk about it. Todd and I will be nice to you, and I won't make Badger Boy State jokes.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabo.
The next Nightlight is only available to stream on Facebook, X, and YouTube. But that won't stop us. Comedian and TV host Mike Toomey joins the show, and Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabo. Weeknights, 7 till 9. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Richard Trent. He's the executive director of Main Street Alliance. And so you represent these small businesses. And I know so many people, man, you know, who struggle, who fight so hard, man. They don't want to give up the ghost. And they just continue to battle because it's just within them, their spirit. I've known people who've lost their small businesses and lost their homes and still fight back, man, and they try another one. But there's just the entrepreneurial spirit in many Americans is folklore, right? I mean, it's what the nation is really built on.
Absolutely. I was raised by a single mom for a while who ran a catering business, and it was tough, and it was our dream, and the values that she instilled in me of hard work, of fighting for that opportunity, it really is kind of the undergirding force within the small business community, and it's a value that keeps getting passed on the stronger our small business ecosystem is. So it's unbelievably important that we protect our small business community, that we support and vote for elected officials that actually give a damn about Main Street and don't just act like they give a damn. And you know, I was before I was talking about Bernie Sanders' speech. His speech was important because it talked about the need to get corporate money out of our political system. It is the foundational concern that keeps it so that small, you know, large businesses can say that they're small businesses and continue to kind of reap the benefits of small businessness without actually being a small business. It's the reason why, you know, mega corporations continue to lobby for policies that don't actually uplift Main Street in our local economies. And so we need to be, it doesn't always feel like the issues entrepreneurs and small business owners need to be focused on. But that money in politics, man, is the foundational concern. And the more we can support candidates that are trying to get that corporate funding out of our political system, I think the stronger we'll see Main Street become and the more folks will be able to live out their entrepreneurial dream.
You know, man, I don't know the Generation Zs and others, you know, baby boomers, our small business kind of reality has kind of run its course. Not many baby boomers are starting small businesses. It is clearly Generation X, Z, millennials. Do you think that, you know, that entrepreneurial spirit that certainly was available, was widespread with baby boomers, do you find that still, you know, with the generations that have come after?
Oh, yeah. The baby boomers are certainly an entrepreneurial generation. And, you know, there are still baby boomers out there starting enterprises who are still trying to live out their dreams. So I don't want to say that, you know, that entrepreneurial dream doesn't die until we do, you know.
Right.
But I will say that Gen Z millennials represent a real promising opportunity for Main Street. One of the fastest growing segments of the American economy, one of the fastest growing segments of the small business world is the creator economy. I was mentioning it before, you know, content creators, folks that are online. That is a real developing marketplace. And we need to make sure that the protections that we've talked about for some brick and mortar establishments and restaurants and bars and, you know, shops, those same protections need to be adjusted and updated for this new creator economy. And so Main Street Alliance is excited to welcome members who fit into that category, sole proprietors, folks that have their own online store. So if you are one of those Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X, or Baby Boomer enterprise spirits, we really, really encourage you to reach out to go to mainstreetalliance.org, become a member, and join the movement.
So I was going to ask you, Main Street Alliance has been in existence how long?
officially started organizing around 2006. These were small business owners in Maine, Oregon, Washington, who were fighting for quality, affordable health care as the Affordable Care Act conversations were starting to develop in the late aughts.
So just, I mean, if we just thought about what you just mentioned, affordable health care, small businesses that don't reap the benefit of what used to be major corporations that could offer something like health care. I mean, to be in small business and be your own businessman or woman and not be able to afford health care is a major issue that would probably, if people got to thinking about it, say, well, hey, I can't run the risk of starting a small business. I have to have health coverage. I have to have health care. You know, many small business people have families. And so it's not just an individual.
That's absolutely right. And you know, these sole proprietors and micro businesses, these small businesses that are technically like one or two people, those are folks that are still getting their health insurance, hopefully on the, you know, the health exchanges that were set up by the Affordable Care Act. Something
and that's not very affordable. And that's not very affordable.
Like those prices have increased. And let me say one more thing, something scary that's looming. The one thing that's been keeping the healthcare rate somewhat affordable for some small business owners over the last few years has been the premium tax credits that were updated during the pandemic and that are set to expire in 2025. What this means is that if you're a 60-year-old couple, you know, making around $80,000 a year, you can expect to pay $17,500 more in healthcare costs as soon as those premium tax credits expire. That's $18,000 out of pocket that American families and small business owners are going to have to pony up if we don't make sure that these premium tax credits are extended. And so that's I'm glad you brought it up. That's an issue that small business owners need to be paying attention to as we enter 2025 and start talking about the tax code, these premium tax credits. It has serious implications for how small businesses are able to operate.
You know, hearing that is frightening. You said 17,000 additional dollars and someone making $80,000. And what I'll say to you, man, is just running that through my head, it says, and we're talking about a nation that is, you know, so far in debt. And so these things are all going to have to be fixed. The debt that the nation incurs, people are looking to cut things because they say we can no longer afford it politically. And they'll look at those credits that you're talking about and say, well, this is something we can no longer afford. At the same time, they're one side of the aisle is talking about cutting even more major tax breaks to the wealthiest people and businesses, you know, in the world. It doesn't appear to be, it's not justice. I mean, you know, and so and those small businesses that have to carry the weight of the world on their shoulders, man, I patronize small businesses, man. I don't care what it is. Because those people are, man, they put their blood into what they are doing, and all of us should, you know, spend some time with small businesses and try to make sure that they make it. Because if they make it, we make it, right?
Absolutely. And one of the twisted things about the last few decades as tech companies and large corporations have gotten bigger. The billionaire class has warped our understanding of what patriotism is, right? They've made it so that patriotism is evading taxes and getting away with this and beating the system and not paying your fair share. And I'll say the most American patriotic thing that you can do is to pay your fair share into this system that supports things like affordable health care, that supports things like infrastructure that so many businesses draft off of for their own operations. And so this is why we need to be having an honest conversation about the tax code and making sure that the billionaire class, massive corporations are actually paying into this. That's the American patriotic thing to do. And so it's up to small business owners to kind of take back that idea of patriotism and really hold these massive corporations and wealthier citizens accountable for paying into it.
You know, man, I do radio 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. I've been doing radio a long, long time. A lot of different conversations that I have. But I will say to you, man, that very few, I think, as important as the conversation you and I are having now. Because it doesn't matter if the small business is in the suburbs, if it's in rural, or if it's in an urban environment. It's the same. It's the lifeline of our nation. And sometimes we get so caught up in the fact that these businesses are in different places and somebody's getting more of a benefit than someone else. But it's not the case. They all face the exact same things.
That's absolutely right. And unfortunately, so many bad faith politicians really amp up that wedge issue and try to create this division between, you know, rural entrepreneurship or urban entrepreneurship, and you're in the country, so these city folk don't get what it is that we have to
right.
get, and then vice versa. And we need less division, more unity amongst the small business community, and recognizing that it's a very small group of massive corporations and wealthy folks that are warping the system and dividing us and pitting us against one another. And that's what Main Street Alliance does. It brings awareness to that tragic issue and tries to build solidarity and build power amongst entrepreneurs, rural and urban. And we've been grateful to have enjoy a really strong membership in Wisconsin and Madison and all throughout the country. And we need to keep building up that membership and keep growing our network.
In the last minute, what do you want to say to the entrepreneurs who are listening, who struggle, who sometimes feel like they have to give up? What do you want to say to them?
You know, I'd say community matters, and you don't have to go at it alone, right? I know that so much of the personality type of the small business owner and the local entrepreneur is this kind of like lone wolf, I'm going to make this dream happen at all costs. And I'm telling you, if you build community and find a political home with like-minded entrepreneurs, things are going to get better. And Main Street Alliance can offer that political home and that community for small business owners. We have for almost 20 years, and we'll keep doing it because there's a big fight looming, whether it's around tax policy, around anti-monopoly enforcement, around strengthening our care economy, making sure that paid leave and health care are available to small business owners. We need to be together, not divided at this moment. And if you go to MainStreetAlliance.org and become a member, then we'll get the party started.
Man, it's been a great conversation this morning. I appreciate you. And I'll tell you, I'm going to keep your information in my Rolodex, and we'll revisit this as time goes on. Thank you very much for taking out this time and kiss the wife and the new baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm about to head back.
All right. We've got a – when we come back, I'm going to talk about – we're going to play some of the interviews that I was able to garner here at the convention. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk.
If the critique, if the beef of Tim Walz is that he spent money on children, on what they needed, whether that be universal meals or whether that be, you know, record amounts for a state to invest in early childhood development. I am like, man, you are critiquing this guy and making him even more my hero.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Yeah, I mean, the Democratic Convention here in Chicago is magical. And Civic Media, thanks to Civic Media, we are here in force, and my colleagues and the team is doing yeoman's work almost around the clock. And man, you have no concept at all of the type of work that the engineers are putting in. Could not do any of this without them. And so those of us who are hosts who get a chance to do the easy work, we don't ever forget that none of it would be possible without all of those engineers and people who make this thing possible. Having said that, I've had some great opportunities to interview some great people, and we're going to continue that again this morning. I look around me and you see politicians and stars and everyone, and you have access to these people. And so yesterday I had some opportunities to do some great interviews, and one I think stood out amongst all the rest, even though there are plenty. We'll be playing them as time goes on. But this one, I walked in, we walked in into the arena, and I'm looking at this guy having a conversation, and my mind right away says, hey, I know that guy, not personally, but I knew of him, and my mind went into recall, and I said, I know who that is. That's Martin Luther King III, and all these people around him, and I said, well, you know, I've got to get an interview with him, and sure enough, I got an opportunity to interview Martin Luther King III and his wife. Calvin, if you'd be so kind.
Beyond words, I'm 70 years old, and so I watch your dad move. When I talk to young people, I tell them about the fact that I didn't read about him in a book. I lived that life, so I'm from the civil rights struggle. He lives in me every day. I don't celebrate him on January 31st. He lives in me through service. As we watch this earth-shattering news that Kamala Harris is now given an opportunity to do something that will stand the test of time throughout history, as your fathers, as the Honorable Barack Obama and others have done. What are your thoughts about this, and what makes this different than the different stages that we saw in our lives where blacks have made progress? What do you see about Kamala Harris getting this opportunity and the tie into that?
First of all, she's a female. And so I think that the fact that this will be the first time to have a black female as the head of our nation, that's tremendous. But also this comes at a time after we've seen so much rollback and pushback. So what it will also symbolize is that we as a nation are much more committed to democracy for each and every one of us, that we're committed to the eradication of the triple evils of poverty and violence and racism and bigotry, and that we truly are ready to look at embracing peace, justice, and equity, because her platform is a platform of vision versus more division.
Can we be I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I don't know what I was going to say.
So can we be expecting too much of her? We still live in a nation where the average white income or wealth is $260,000. The average wealth of a black family is $40,000. In my lifetime, we haven't seen changes. There's been Barack Obama. Now we're looking at Kamala Harris and we're somehow thinking she's going to be the savior. So how are we ever going to get to a point in this society where there is some equity and some fairness when it comes to the differences between people of color?
So I don't think that we are looking for an individual savior. I don't know that leadership model totally will address what we're looking for. But what it does take is leadership in the religious community, leadership in the political arena, leadership in the business community, community leaders. If we're all working together, this can happen. I mean, I've seen a lot of progress for a whole lot of individuals, but it has not translated down to the bottom levels. The only way we do that is create the climate where people can, in fact, lift themselves up by their own bootstrap. My dad used to say that it's an insult to say to a bootless man or person, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. If we can create the boots and the opportunity and the climate, then people can lift themselves up and we can ultimately address that inequality and income gap. But it has to be a serious focus. It has to be a strategic plan. I don't know that a specific strategic plan exists. That has to be created to help accomplish that. So if we looked at the choice that we have, the choice of somebody I don't even want to call their name, who constantly is destructive, mentioning things that just don't make any sense, and someone who is reaching out to everyone saying, look, I would like for you to be at the table. I want to hear your voice. We will incorporate a plan that includes the prospect of people being able to be lifted up. That's what this country is seen as, and it must become the America that it ought to be. That's what my dad said. Nothing about great again, because I don't know when that was. I'm not sure what that applies to. But we can create the climate for America to become a truly great nation for all people.
My last question for you is, your father challenged the government, and he challenged this nation to live up to his creed. And in my 70 years of living, it has yet to do that. So speaking for the children who are coming up in a much more difficult time even than I did when we loved each other and our community had people who were willing to fight and we were organized and pulled together. Young people today don't know much about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. They don't know much even about Barack Obama.
All right. That's an interview with Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's son, Martin Luther King III. We're going to be able to play that back again at some point in time. It's actually going to you be able to get it on our website. We've got to go. And up next, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, will be joining us.
News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Todd Albaugh here. Join us next time as we continue our coverage live from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Trigvi Olsen, the Lincoln Project, is here, along with Bill McCutcheon. We'll break it on down for you. Join us.
The Democratic National Convention is in Chicago, and our team will be there to tell you what you need to know. I'm Civic Media News Director Terry Bell.
And I'm Todd Albaugh, host of The Todd Albaugh Show. Count on us for important analysis, interviews, and the Democrats' nomination of their presidential candidate.
Live from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Listen for updates, plus special coverage at 6 each night. Find it on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.